We tend to get afraid of things that we really don't need to be afraid of. Isn't that right? Let me give you an example. Bats. We shouldn't be afraid of bats. Because Rachel said this morning that they're friendly animals and they won't hurt you. But yet, when a bat gets in the house, we tend to crawl under the couch or anything that you can crawl under, like a laptop or a blanket, you know? So we get afraid of those things. Some of us don't get afraid, though. And we're the ones who go and open the door and let it out. That's how that goes. Sometimes people are afraid of clowns. My wife tells stories about whenever she was young that they would go to the circus, or if there was a birthday party and there was a clown there, that was not a good situation. And sometimes people get afraid of clowns. You know, really, there's no reason for us to be afraid of Chuck E. Cheese. I know he's a giant rat, but we don't need to be afraid of Chuck E. Cheese. Spiders. Spiders get a bad rap, don't they? Yes, they do, and they deserve a bad rap. Let me just give you my humble opinion. But you know, I got to thinking about it today. I have to admit, I don't know anybody who's died from a spider bite. And a matter of fact, the only reason I think that I'm so terrified, other than what they look like and when they get on you, it's like amplified. But, you hear these stories from the internet. And you see it online, all these people who've died, and then you see all the spider bites. And then there's countless pictures of people who've been bitten by certain spiders, and they've lost limbs and all that stuff, which I won't go into many details on that. I don't want to see some of you passing out. But I don't know anybody who's died from a spider bite. I don't know anybody who has even had a serious problem because of a spider bite. I don't know. But yet, it's something that we are really afraid of. Church buildings at night, when the lights are off and you're all by yourself. Yes, I know that everything squeaks because I'm here when I'm by myself and it's night and I hear squeaking and I get up and I go check I don't know where the squeak came from, and it's everything just seems to squeak, but there's nothing to be afraid of. There are some things that we're afraid of, but one thing we should never, ever, ever be afraid of is following God's leadership in our life. We should never be afraid to do that. In Genesis chapter 31, we see fear. Now, it's mixed in obedience, so it's a little bit difficult to identify. But they're afraid. Jacob's afraid, and his family is afraid. I was talking on the phone with our missionaries, the Stewart family, or rather the Switzer family. They're packing up right now, and in 2 weeks, 3 weeks rather, they're going to be flying out for South Africa. Now, Brother John Switzer, who I actually talked to on the phone, was a missionary. His dad and mom were a missionary in South Africa, so he's familiar with the area. And going back to South Africa as a missionary, for him, I guess, would be almost like going home. But consider his wife and his children who didn't grow up in South Africa, but in America. And now you're going to go to South Africa, not for a visit, but you're going to live there. Would you say that there might be just a tad bit of fear in the preparation of going to South Africa? I would think that. At times we surrender to God's plan for our life, and our desire is to be obedient to God, to do His will, to serve Him. And then it seems as we're trying to serve God, things start going wrong. Things aren't going the way, you know, that we assumed they would go because we've been obedient to God. Finances are bad. We're in a position where it seems like we're in either danger or, you know, we're overloaded with stress or a particular problem has come our way and it's created in us this feeling of fear. How is this going to, you know, how's this going to work out? It might be this morning, or rather tonight, that some in here are afraid to be obedient to God. Obedience to God creates in maybe some of us in here tonight a certain anxiety. Like, let me just give you, maybe we can compare it to something. Let's say that I ask you to come up here and give a speech in front of everybody. Now, how would that feel? You'd probably feel just a tad nervous, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you say? Would you agree with me about that? Okay, I want you to come up here and I want you to testify to the church from the pulpit in front of everybody. Well, we get nervous about those things. And so whenever God leads us and He gives us direction and He wants us to follow His leadership, at times following God's leadership can create in us a feeling of fear, because we're afraid of what might happen. We're afraid of what someone might think. We're afraid of the changes that might happen in our life. And it might make us, you know, lose some comforts. And so, you know, what is it that, you know, whenever we have those feelings of fear, why is it that we get that? Well, I want to submit to you that a lot of times it's because we're afraid of what other people are going to think of us. We're afraid of what the people in either our family, the people that we love, or the people in our, you know, that are our peers. We're afraid of what they might think. You know, a lot of times this is something that can become a legitimate fear because of the way that the world is. And so I want you to see that in verses 1 and 2 here as we get into this. The attitude of the world. Look at verse number 1. And he heard the words of Jacob is the one who is hearing. And Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And so Laban completely changed. The way that Laban was with Jacob wasn't like it was before. And now the sons of Laban, who have observed that Jacob is growing and Jacob is becoming wealthy, and they are seeing that Jacob's wealth is coming from Laban's resources. And they're thinking, man, this guy's stealing away our inheritance. And we can almost feel their selfishness, as they are getting upset about the growth and the wealth, the riches, which is what it means by glory here in verse number 1, hath gotten all his glory. That word glory means riches. And his countenance in verse number 2, Laban's countenance means his face. And it seems to imply his attitude, that now his attitude has changed towards Jacob. And this seems fairly dramatic. We can relate with this because the attitude of the world constantly changes. And yeah, we might find ourselves accepted by the world at times, but you just wait around because it's guaranteed that you will not always be the popular one in the world. And it creates in us really at times an anxiety to be obedient and follow God's leadership in our life. I remember when we went to the zoo, that was on Friday, and we celebrated Caleb's birthday. He's 9 years old now. So we went to the zoo, we had a blast. But there were probably 9 million people there. So, you know, it was like every exhibit, you had to keep moving. So hopefully you got to see the animal while you kept moving, like a herd of cattle through the thing. While we were in the aquarium area, Phoebe, which is my friend Brother Ben Quinlan, we took, you know, a couple of his children with us. You know, and that's an interesting story too, but Phoebe was with us in the aquarium, and she, I found out, is as ornery than all four of my kids put together. So, which is really amazing, but she is. So if I was her dad, we might have had a little powwow a few times. But anyway, so we're in the aquarium, and I already told you how many people are in there. And so while we're looking at some of the animals in the fish tank, she takes her tissue, which has a bunch of snot in it, and throws it in the aquarium, the one that's open face on top, that you're not supposed to throw stuff in. And you're thinking, you know, it's a kid, you know, no big deal. Well, 90% of the people who were there didn't think it was a little thing. They got really upset about it. And where we were maybe part of the crowd and a little bit accepted, after that, we were getting, the countenance changed. Can I just say it that way? The people that were around us, their countenance changed. And we heard murmuring and muttering, you know, and I just wanted to throw my hands up. This is not my child. You know, you watch their kids, you know, keep your eye on your kids. You know, I just heard this muttering, you know. Well, that's what happened to Jacob. His father-in-law's countenance changed. He was no longer popular in the eyes of his family. So God told Jacob to leave town. And he also told him that he would be with him. Look at verse number 3. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return into the land of thy fathers and into thy kindred, and I will be with thee. That's really important, because this is a big deal, what God has just, right there in verse 3, asked Jacob to do. This is a major transition in the life of Jacob. Now, he's been serving for these 20 years, we're going to find out. And now God is leading him away from the place where he has lived for all of these years and gained all of his wealth and his family and his children. And now God has said, it's time for you to go. But he put this little addendum on there, I'm going to be with you. That's good news. Verse number 4, Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto the flock and sent unto them. And then he began to talk to them about his father-in-law's countenance and how he had cheated them, changed his wage, and they got it. But I want you to notice something in verse number 4. Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah where? To the field. Why would he call his wives to go into the field to meet with him? Now, this is something, if you know, you're just sort of casually reading through this, you just read over that and you totally miss it. But this is a big deal. I mean, he is calling, he didn't call a powwow in the tent and say, hey, listen, we need to have a talk. I need to go over some things with you because we got some pretty major transition happening here. I mean, God has spoke to me, we got to leave. No. He called his wives to the field to where he is. Why? To ensure secrecy. He didn't want anybody to know about it. Did you know at times when God leads us that we can do that too? That there are times that God speaks to us and all he wants us to do is follow him. And in our heart, what do we want to do? We want to follow him. But we don't want anybody else to know about it. We're afraid. Well, what will they think? I remember whenever I got saved, I was this way. God spoke to me and called me into salvation. And I mean to tell you what, I was excited that there was a way to get to heaven. Man, because I was afraid I was going to go to hell. But then the guys were like, hey, you need to go stand up in front of the whole church. I didn't want to do that. I was afraid. And God called me, but I was afraid. And so God spoke to Jacob here. And it's time to, you know, make preparations to be obedient to God. And so he called his wives into the field to ensure secrecy. Now, verse number 11. The angel spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see all the rams that leap upon the cattle that are ranged straight and speckled and gristled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee, and I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me, now arise and get thee out from the land and return into the land of thy kindred. And Rachel, he tells this to Rachel and Leah. But did you know what he really, one of the main points he was making to his wives right there? And I believe a point that God is making to us is that we can clearly identify times in our life whenever God has provided for us. Whenever he has financially taken care of us. And we can see that God did that. Or times in our life whenever we desire to be obedient to God, and we can look back at times whenever God provided finances for us at just the right time. God did that. And we can clearly see it. If we're willing this tonight, we could probably make a list of times when God financially provided for us. Can't we do that? Provided right here. Oh man, God did something amazing there. He did something amazing there. He did something amazing there. God revealed to that to Jacob in his dream. Because he wanted Jacob to know something. If you follow me, I'm going to take care of you. So his wives, Rachel and Leah, verse 14, answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? That's a sad testimony on Laban, isn't it? How he had basically cashed in on the stock of his, the inheritance of his family and was indulging in it himself, leaving nothing for his family. Verse 15, we are not counted unto him as strangers, for he hath sold us and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches of which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God has said unto thee, do. And so they took a step. And I want you to know, even though the way that they said this doesn't sound like a step of faith, this is a step of faith. You grew up all of your life in one place. You've been in one place all of your life with the family. You've had financial security. And now God is moving you somewhere to where you don't know where you're going to go. And you don't know what the finances are going to be. And you don't know how it's going to, how this thing is going to transpire and how it's going to go. And they said, where he has led you, we have seen God do this work. We will follow you. And so they took that step by faith. Now Jacob decided that he had the support of his wives, his family, and he had the leadership of God. So what did he decide to do? Because God said, hey, you need to get out of here. Padan Aram, Syria. You need to get out of Syria. You need to go back to Israel where your home is. So he started packing up, and we're going to take off. But I want you to notice something really amazing about the process of packing and leaving. We saw a great video, didn't we? Getting ready for camp where we did some packing. And, you know, we put some stuff in there, probably somewhat unnecessary. Like we saw Olivia stick a lamp in her suitcase. And I'm really glad we took Susie with us. And that was great. But I want you to see what happens in the packing process when it comes to leaving Syria. Verse 17. Then Jacob rose up, set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods that he had gotten, cattle of his getting, which he had gotten in Padan Aram, for to go unto Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. Laban went to shear his sheep. Now, verse 19, it almost feels like it's stuffed in there and it doesn't belong, doesn't it? But it's part of the packing. So let's make sure we include it. Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. I don't think that's a little thing. Oh yeah, I need to make sure I get all my makeup. Yeah, make sure I get all my clothes. And oh yeah, all of the idols of Dad. Let me make sure I get all of those. Put those in the suitcase too. That's what she did. Verse 20, Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian and told him not that he fled. Why do you think he didn't tell him he was leaving? Could it be that he was afraid? Yeah, he was afraid. So he fled with all that he had and rose up and passed over the river, the river Euphrates, and faced toward the Mount Gilead, which is towards home. Now, I want to talk to you for a few seconds here about these gods that Rachel grabbed. Why would she do that? Why would she take the gods of her father? Well, initially you would think, well, she's just wanting to cash in on dad's goods, you know, because dad has cheated her. Why don't I just turn around and take something from dad? You know, he's not been a good dad to me. He spent all of my money, so I'm just going to take something. And initially you would see it that way, and maybe that's what she did. But really, that's not really what her intent was. Can I tell you she did it because she was afraid? Would you believe me if I told you that? You see, the gods that she would have stolen would have been called teraphims, which were like little figurines. Little figurines. Small enough to hide in a camel's pouch, we'll find out later, right? Now, these figurines would have been gods designed, listen close, to protect the family and were designed to be worshipped by the family members. Some commentators suggest that they were images of the family's ancestors. So you had these figurines and it would be like great-great-grandpa Joe, you know. And so we don't just have Grandpa Joe with us to watch out over the family. We actually talk to him. That's what they did. They consult with him. And what would these figurines supposedly do for the family? Two things. They would provide protection. And whoever was the one who held possession of these teraphims would be the one who would gain access to the inheritance. So Rachel stole them, why? To guarantee protection. She stole these figurines to not just guarantee protection, but just in case it doesn't work out over there in Israel, we have something to fall back on. It reminds me whenever I told Dad I was going to go to Bible college. I went to Dad, I said, listen, Dad, God's called me to preach, and He wants me, I'm going to go to Bible college. And I told him which Bible college I was going to go to, and he told me that I was out of my mind. He said I was throwing my life away. He said, you're wasting your life. That's encouraging. Thanks, Dad. I mean, he doesn't feel that way now, but that was what his sentiments were. That he did not agree with what I was doing, and he would encourage me to do this. Hey, you need to go to a university where you're going to get an accredited degree, and then go to that college and get your Bible little degree. And then that way, if it doesn't work out over here on the ministry part, you have something you can fall back on. Because, you know, if you get in the ministry and all you have is this unaccredited Bible degree, then you're not going to have anything to fall back on. Well, that's the mentality of Rachel here. And why would she grab these things to ensure protection? I submit to you, because she's afraid. You know, sometimes Sometimes God provides protection for us, and we don't even know that God is providing protection for us. Because Jacob grabbed his family and they took off out of town. And they've been gone 3 days and Laban finds out about it. You think, and his gods are gone. You think he's just going to let it go? I don't think so. I mean, he's afraid that because Jacob has stolen his gods, that it's going to be a matter of years that Jacob's going to show back up and lay claim to his inheritance. He's like, I got to go get him. So he gets on the horses, the donkeys. Not the donkeys, but the camels. 22, look what it says. And it was told Laban the third day that Jacob was fled, and he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not unto Jacob good or neither good nor bad. Let me tell you, this is amazing, the scene here that's unfolding. And by the way, this is a transition where now we have Jacob who has fled with his family, and now Laban has found out about it. His gods are gone, and he's got to go get this thing back. And so he gets on his camels with his brethren, and he's armed for battle. He's going to engage if he has to. We're going to fight this thing out if we need to. And it takes him 7 days. So he was shearing sheep for 3 days, and it took him 7 days to find Jacob, to catch up to Jacob. That's 10 days. He finally makes his way to him. But right before he engages Jacob, or somewhere in this process, one of those nights, God spoke to him. And he said, you better leave Jacob alone. You better not hinder him, and you better not hurt him. Did Jacob know about that dream? No. Did you know there's times whenever we get stressed out about God, God's leadership in our life? And all along the way, God has been protecting us in ways that we didn't even see. He protects us behind the scenes. And it might be that that one thing that we are just up in arms about or totally, you know, knotted in our stomach about, that God has already got it all worked out. We just don't know. Well, that's what happened here. So he provides protection and we had no idea. Sometimes he provides protection in spite of us. And we do our very best to mess it up, don't we? I mean, God's guidance, his protection, his plan. And we do our best to make this thing a mess, but he protects us in spite of us. Look at verse 25. Laban overtook Jacob. We already identified how long that took. Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount. Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead also. So they're both pitched. What does that mean? That means you might remember a story that happens, you know, several centuries later between two nations that were pitched with a valley in between them. Remember these two, the Philistines and the armies of Israel, and their tents were pitched. And then they would meet at the day, and there would be a giant who would come out there and see, and would bring railing against the God of Israel. Send me a man that we might fight together. Remember Goliath? This scene right here is a scene of battle. Their tents are pitched, and Laban has prepared himself for battle. He's going to fight if he has to. 26, Laban said unto Jacob, what hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me? That you've deceived me, is what he's saying. You've taken away my family. Look at the wording here. Verse 26, as captives, that's a word of military word. With the sword, that's a military word. 27, wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me and didst not tell me, that I might have sent thee away with myrrh and songs and tabret and with a harp? Why did you do this and not allow me to have a celebration and send you away? I almost laugh when I read that, by the way. 28, and hast now suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters, and hast now done foolishly in doing so. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. You know what he's saying? I've got everything prepared to go to war and battle with you and destroy you right now. And take what Laban believed was his by force. But the God of your father spake to me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob, neither good nor bad. You know what that means? I was planning to come and to wipe you out because of what you did. But your God spoke to me. And he told me I better let you go and not hinder you. 30, look what it says. And now, though thou wouldst needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? So, I mean, we almost have the feeling now that this little conflict would have never even have happened if Rachel didn't take the gods. That's the feeling I think we're supposed to have. If Rachel didn't decide in her fear that she was going to take these gods as sort of a security blanket, you know, something to fall back on, something that will give us protection because we're going into a dangerous land, now has created a problem. I bet God protected them. And so when we act out of fear, it at times puts us in danger, doesn't it? And our loved ones in danger. And that's what Rachel did. Her action, based upon her fear from being obedient to God, yes, being obedient to God, but fear because of the unknown in that caused her to grab these gods, and now her entire family is in danger. And I want you to see that. Look at verse 33. Laban went into Jacob's tent and Leah's tent, and then to the two maidservants' tents. Well, let me back up and explain to you Jacob in 31. I'm sorry, I skipped a few verses. Look at 31. Jacob answered and said unto Laban, because I was afraid, and there it is. You should probably mark that because that's a theme through this whole chapter. Because I was afraid. For I said, peradventure thou would take me by force thy daughters from me. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. You know, whenever he said that, he had no idea Rachel was the one that stole him. And he just put the death sentence on his own wife. Right there he did. And so that's what Laban does. He searches through the verse 33, the tents of Leah, the maidservants, and he didn't find them. He gets through Leah's tent, and then he goes to Rachel's tent. Verse 34. Now Rachel had taken the images, put them in the camel's furniture, the camel sacks there, and sat on them. And Laban searched all the tent, found them not. She said unto her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for it is the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the image because, you know, Rachel told this lie that she was in her, you know, particular time where she couldn't, you know, stand up or be exposed in that way. Now I want you to think about this for a second, because I think there's an allusion to really what God thinks about the false gods. If you think about it, she was setting on the false gods that were designed to be their protection. She was setting on them. Laban would have never, ever guessed that if she was in that particular state in her physiology, that she would ever sit on top of his gods in that condition. But that is the view that's what we're supposed to see. The actual protection that those gods provide, zero. So Jacob was wroth because he didn't find any of those images. 36, Jacob was wroth, chode with Laban, and they had a nice little argument there. Jacob answered and said unto Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of thy household stuff? Set there before my brethren and thy brethren. Let's create a courtroom here setting and get justice where it's supposed to be, and that we can judge between both of us and see who is, you know, right and who is wrong. What Rachel did almost cost her life and put in jeopardy the whole plan. But you know, it's amazing that we can see God's clear provision of protection and security through this whole episode with Jacob and his family. Look at verse 38. He goes on, he says, for 20 years I've been with thee. The ewes and the she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams, my flock, have I not eaten. That which was torn of the beasts I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. And he goes on and he explains how good he has been to his father-in-law, and how he has proven himself faithful and an honest worker, and he has been upright. And that for these 20 years, you know what Jacob has done? He has earned his freedom, and he has earned the freedom of his family. And that, in fact, Laban had been the one who was deceptive by changing his wage over and over and over again. And then in verse 42, look what it says. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hast sent me away now empty. God has seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight. And so God is, he tells Laban, God is bringing judgment upon you. Now, Jacob had been obedient to God, and God had demonstrated himself to Jacob, faithful to take care faithful to provide for him in his labor. Faithful to protect him. Now, I want you to see that Laban still felt like he was the authority. He still felt like he was the one who was the owner of Jacob's family. But he reluctantly consented and allowed that there, you know, might be a peace treaty between the two. Now, I want you to see this in verse 43. Laban answered and said unto Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. What can I do this day unto thee, unto these my daughters, and to these, into their children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee." So Jacob lived in obedience to God, and God demonstrated himself faithful by protecting him and giving him security. And giving him security, what I mean by that is gave him possessions that he might, in a wealthy way, take care of his family. God provided. And so Laban recognized that he had no case. All of the evidence was against him, that he was the deceiver. And yeah, there was nothing he could say, there was nothing he could do. The only one argument he had was that they stole his gods and they couldn't find those. And so he said, "You know what? There's nothing I can say here. You have God with you, and so let's make a peace treaty." And they go on from then, verse 45, all the way to the end of the chapter. And they get this pillar built up, they get the rocks together, and they make this thing so that they might make a treaty. In other words, it's like, "You know what? You stay on your side, I'll stay on my side, and life will be good." That's what it, verse 55, look what it says. "This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap, and this pillar unto me for harm." In other words, you stay on your side, I'll stay on my side, and we'll just call it good. Yeah. And so he gets the family together, kisses everybody. They have supper, sacrifices 54 and 55. Verse 55, he rises up early, kisses the family, and he's on his way. We don't hear anything about him anymore. But I do think that God has something for you and I tonight. We just sort of in a hurried way went through the entire 55 verses of chapter 31. And the reason why we did all of them is because it's just making one point. Just one point. And that is that you don't have to be afraid of God's leadership. When you follow God, He will demonstrate Himself faithful to protect you and to provide for you all the way. I said that God called me to be a pastor, and I remember whenever He called me, I was on my way into a chapel class for the Christian school where I went, and I made my way into the door to go into auditorium was over here, and I made my way in. I was about where that sound projector is, and we sat on this side over here. It was two sections just like this, and we took up maybe four rows. All the little kids sat at the front, and then the upper class sat on the back, you know, rows. And I was about where that projector is whenever God spoke to me that He wanted me to be in the ministry. He wanted me to be a pastor. And I said, "Oh no." And I sat down and No. And I fought it. And I ran from it for 2 years. And every time I'd hear a sermon, He didn't speak to me about my music. My music was wrong, I guarantee you that. He didn't talk to me about my TV watching, which was wrong also. He didn't talk to me about, you know, my activity as far as extracurricular activity. He didn't talk to me about any of that stuff. Every time I sat in a message, He always told me, "I want you to be a pastor." Every single time. I hated going to church. I hated going to chapel. I just didn't want to hear that call anymore. I did not want to hear it, so I stopped listening to the messages. I just sat there, and I just sort of got engulfed in my own little world. And I played basketball, I played sports, and I really just gave myself to that. And when it was preaching time, I was not in the auditorium. I was on the basketball court already in my mind. The whole sermon. Because it didn't matter if I listened. I always heard the exact same thing. Why would I do that? And I can tell you why. Because I was afraid. I was afraid to answer God's call to be in the ministry. Because I was afraid that I wasn't going to be poor. I was afraid that I was not going to be popular anymore. I was afraid that I was never going to get to do anything fun ever again. Because that's the way the life of a pastor is. You can't do anything fun ever. And I thought that I would have to wear a tie for the rest of my life, every day, and even sleep in it. Because that's what pastors do. I thought that. I was afraid. And because I was afraid, it made me make precautions in my life to protect myself and to provide for myself. Because I was afraid God wasn't going to be able to provide for me the things that I thought I needed to enjoy my life. And we tend to do that. We tend to hear God's leading in our life, and then we tend to be afraid of it. Because we're afraid that God's not going to be able to provide for us if we do it. And we might even have the heart that we want to be obedient to God. We want to do what He wants us to do. And like Jacob, we might even say, I'm doing it! But then whenever we step out, we get afraid again. And we start making other precautions just in case God can't take care of us. Whether it be financially or protection. So, because of fear, it causes us to act in not only ways of denying the leadership of God, but even while we're following the leadership of God, fear can cause us to not trust that God is going to provide for us what we need to do what He's called us to do. And then we'll start making all these plans and preparations and actually make things harder and worse on ourselves. You know, the message is simple today. You don't have to do that. You do not have to make plans and preparations to take care and provide for yourself if you're following God's leadership. You don't have to figure out a strategy or a plan so that, you know, things are going to be provided for just in case God can't provide for us. You don't have to do that. You can trust that if you're following God, if you're obedient to Him and you're following His leadership, that He's going to provide for you. That's simple, isn't it? You can trust that. You know what that means? It means you don't have to live in fear if you're following God. That's simple, but that's the statement. You do not have to be afraid if you are following God. I wish teenagers could get a hold of that. Especially if God is calling a teenager to be, or a young person, not just a teenager, God can call any of us into a particular ministry. But I remember when God called me to be in the ministry. And I was afraid. And so I didn't want to do it. But we don't have to be afraid. Because if God is guiding you, if you follow Him, He will provide for you everything that you need. Protection and security and finances. Now that's encouraging. So you can follow Him and not be afraid. So if God's calling you and He's leading you in your life, you can follow Him and not be afraid. So if you're in God's will today, you have made a decision, and you in your heart, you know it's what God wanted you to do, and now things aren't going so hot. What does that tend to make us feel? A little bit afraid? A little bit nervous? Hey, listen, if you have followed God and you're doing God's will and you're right where He wants you to be, in your inobedience to God, you do not have to be afraid, because He will provide. Well, He's not providing like I think that He should. He's not providing like, you know, hey, listen, He might be working behind the scenes and you don't even see it. He might be. But one thing that we can know for sure, that if you're where He wants you to be and you're following His leadership in your life, then you don't have to be afraid, because He's not going to leave you hanging. He's going to take care of you. And if there's any one message we can get from this entire huge hunk of a chapter that we've just taken, that we've just studied tonight, that it's that. And we don't have to be afraid when we're following God. We don't have to be afraid. So let God lead you. And if He wants you to be a teacher, don't be afraid of it. Let God lead you. And if He wants you to make a financial decision, then trust Him. You know, if let God lead you. If He wants you to be in the ministry, He's called you to either be a pastor, or He's called you to be a missionary, or He's called you to be a youth worker, or He's called you to do something in regards to the ministry, you can surrender and not be afraid of God's call in your life, because His promise is that He will provide, He will take care of you. So we can. We can surrender our activity to Him. And when circumstances seem to be challenging and create in us fear, then we can just right at that moment remember, am I where God wants me to be? Yes. Am I doing what He wants me to do? Yes. Am I being obedient to Him in His call in my life? Yes. I don't have to be afraid, because He's going to protect. He's going to provide. Let's trust Him and watch Him do it. I wish Jacob and Rachel would have not just been obedient to God, but would have not been afraid and just trusted that God is going to provide and God is going to protect. And then it would have, I think, taken away some of the problems they had in this journey that we said tonight. So let's do that. Let's trust Him in His leadership in our life. Father, tonight we pray for Your help, God, in this area of at times struggle that we have and being afraid, Lord, of circumstances that will create in us really anxiety. And I pray, Lord, that You'll, Lord, work in the hearts of Your people tonight and give them confidence that they can trust that You're going to provide. And then, Lord, it might be that some tonight would say, I'm not been right with You. I'm not right with You. I'm not being obedient to You. And I pray, God, You'd help them to have strength to be obedient, answer the call, do what You'd have them to do. We'll give You the glory for that. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand together. God's worked in your heart. Let's do business with Him. Thank you. Amen. Thank you, Miss Marilyn. You can be seated. We're going to bring the video in, I think. And Lord willing, we will see how Vacation Bible School went. Brother Chad went to grab that. I don't think there's ever a day as Christians until we make our way to glory, right? That we won't have trouble with worry and fear because of, you know, just the trials, I think, in life. Let's see. You get it? All right.